Hello, I'm Keith Pellon. This is number 0222, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0222. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet bullying expert Carl Romaine, who talks about the recent scandal that's plaguing the Miami Dolphins in the NFL.
I worked with the New York Giants back in the year 2000. We've never seen or heard anything like this. This goes way beyond just the typical stuff that goes on, and just even way beyond the, you know, toughening up another player. And I think in his interview, Incognito even said, you know, I definitely took it too far.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit is back to talk about how bad relationships are being used as humor in television commercials to sell products.
A joke isn't always just a joke. The way I teach it when it comes to absorbing any form of media, entertainment for one person can be education for another. This might teach a number of women out there who are watching it, especially if they're young and experienced with relationships, that kind of behavior is acceptable. It's also teaching men out there that kind of behavior may be acceptable because, well, it happened to somebody else and they were okay with it, when in reality, you don't treat your partner that way.
Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. Book Banter takes an illustrated look back at World War I with The Great War, a photographic narrative. So lest we forget, it's coming up soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0222, was Keith Perrin, who is the host of The Happy Station Show, which is heard on PCJ Media. And, of course, you know the Stuff File program. If you listen closely to the show, you know the Stuff File program is also heard on PCJ Media. Thank you very much, Keith, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Keith lives all the way in Taiwan, so he's on the other side of the globe, practically, basically. Thank you, Keith, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, everybody is familiar with the iconic image of the lone protester standing in front of a line of tanks in Tiananmen Square. Well, that's China. In Russia, they do things a little differently, maybe because it's harder to get large amounts of vodka in China. Moscow's Red Square was the scene of a bizarre protest when artist Pyotr Pavlensky stripped naked and nailed his testicles to the cobblestones in front of St. Basil's Cathedral. Okay, let's stop right here for a moment, shall we? I'm not a drinker, so I may be wrong, but I don't think there's enough alcohol on the planet to make me want to nail my testicles to the cobblestones. I mean, let's assume I got the nutty idea into my head. So I get the hammer and the nail, and I pound away once. Then I hit the nail a second time. Right about now, I'm rethinking this process. But that's just me. Anyway, Pavlensky is no stranger to making a testicle, or I should say spectacle, of himself. In 2012, he sewed his mouth shut to support jailed musicians from Russia, the punk rock group Pussy Riot, and then he wrapped his naked body in barbed wire the same year outside St. Petersburg government buildings to protest what he referred to as Russia's repressive regime. This most recent stunt was aimed at protesting apathy and political indifference among the Russian public, so he said. However, a Russian judge said that the police documents didn't show that Pavlensky had broken the law when he performed his protest. In Russia, what a man nails his testicles to apparently is his business. Unless I guess he nails them on somebody else. But I don't know. So he's nailed his testicles to the cobblestone, and he's also wrapped his naked body in barbed wire. You know, it may be a protest, but you have to think on some deep, sick level, he's kind of enjoying this. Yeah. Anyway, while you still have that imagery in your head, let's move on to a similar story, shall we? A student stapled his testicles... Gee, I find it hard to believe this is becoming a habit, but anyway. A student stapled his testicles as a forfeit after losing a game of FIFA 13. Nathan Bells, that's Bells, his cringe-worthy challenge came after losing the Xbox match to a friend by the name of Saber Da Silva. The student took the painful punishment as part of a FIFA Forfeits Sunday event that is held at his halls of residence. Nathan, who is 20 and studying at Leeds University, said, "It brought a tear to my eye." Yeah, it brings a tear to my eye. I'm not the one who's doing it. Anyway, he says, It brought a tear to my eye. I usually beat Saber. He got lucky. That eye-watering moment he jammed a staple into his scrotum was broadcast on the student news website, The Tab. "It was hilarious," said Da Silva. "Nobody has turned down a forfeit yet." Oh, wow. I have a feeling this is eventually going to lead to a death. Anyway, a video of the painful forfeit has also been circulating on social media. Oh, I'm sure the parents of all these students must be so proud that their offspring are off at school doing this kind of stuff. Now that's higher education for you, huh? Wow. Anyway, we have one more Stuff File news story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Police in Georgia allege a woman caught having drunken sex with a man in a parked vehicle attempted to put a cheeseburger on her foot as if it were a sandal. The Loganville Police Department said an officer allegedly spotted Rachel Gossett, age 25, and Frank Lucas, age 27, having sex in the front seat of a Dodge truck parked outside the Waffle House Eatery in Loganville at about 1 a.m. on Sunday and interrupted the amorous couple. Gossett, who had been straddling Lucas without any pants on, jumped into the passenger seat and just sat there while Lucas pulled up his pants. "I had to tell the female numerous times to get dressed before she finally did," said Officer Joshua Brickle. When the female finally got dressed, she attempted to put a cheeseburger on her foot as if it were a sandal. Gossett and Lucas were both arrested on charges of loitering and public drunkenness. Yeah, either she was extremely drunk or cheeseburgers at this Waffle House are particularly awful looking. Or come with a toe strap. One or the other. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? The current scandal that is plaguing the Miami Dolphins has shone a spotlight on the issue of locker room mentality and bullying. The Richie Incognito Jonathan Martin scandal has been all the talk of late. But what is it really like inside an NFL locker room? On the line with us right now is Carl Romaine, who is a part-time NFL trainer and also an expert on bullying. He's the author of The Self-Confidence Factor, A Parent's Guide to Bully Prevention. And Carl joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Carl.
Hello, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Nice to have you on. So this has still gone on in the news, and at the time of this recording, we still have not heard from Jonathan Martin. So there's still one side of the story we haven't fully explored yet. But from what we know at this time, is this situation, knowing that you have an in, as it were, to locker room mentality in the NFL and you know about bullying, is this situation out of the norm in the NFL?
I think it's way out of the norm. Just even in talking to the other football players that I'm familiar with, I worked with the New York Giants back in the year 2000. We've never seen or heard anything like this. This goes way beyond just the typical stuff that goes on, and just even way beyond the, you know, toughening up another player. So, and I think in his interview, Incognito even said, you know, "I definitely took it too far."
So, but we're hearing a lot of things, which clearly takes the situation too far. But we're also hearing items and stories that some players are saying isn't too far? In other words, are we as the general population not grasping what it's like in the NFL and where the boundaries are and how they are different than the rest of the world?
I think any athletic endeavor is going to be different from the rest of the world. I mean, every day these people are fighting for their positions, they're fighting for their jobs. You know, if you go to a job today and you don't have a good day, it's bad, but how bad is it? You know, when you're talking about a professional athlete, you know, it could make the difference as to whether or not they're going to start on Sunday. That's a whole other culture. You know, every team is fighting to win. They're fighting for their position. They're fighting for their job. So in that, you have a very competitive culture to begin with. And then additionally, you have guys that you're trying to motivate, inspire, and as a coach, you're probably trying to find different ways to do that. Because from my understanding and the things that I've heard, this whole thing was initiated by the coach. Now, whether or not the coach chose the right person for the job, that's a different story. Another thing that Incognito said was if he was friends with Martin and that he had Martin's back, and if he had realized that he had went too far, that he'd be the first person to apologize. Well, I think that remains to be seen, and because Martin has yet to come out and say anything about it. You know, so we really don't even know what his true feelings are about the whole situation.
Again, why do you think it has been so long since the initial story broke that Martin has said anything?
You know, we don't know what his emotional state is. We don't know how badly this has impacted him or what's going on inside or behind closed doors with his family and what conversations they're having. The report that came out was from an attorney that was representing the family and just really talking about his feelings and what happened. You know, do I think he handled it right? I think on some level he did. I think he did the best he could with a bad situation. I think that it was better than him acting out in a violent manner in any form, any way, shape, or form. I don't know what other stance he could have took. I think he could have talked to Rich Incognito, but it was really more like a group thing, from what I'm understanding, and I guess Incognito was the leader of that group.
As reprehensible as the incidents have been reported to be, could it be a situation, as far as Jonathan Martin is concerned, that this is the straw that broke the camel's back? In other words, that what is happening in Miami might be the tipping point of things that happened earlier in his career, maybe even in college?
Absolutely. I mean, it could have happened to him in childhood. You know, we have no idea if he was bullied before. You know, and as an athlete, yeah, he's 6'5", 300 pounds, and people look at him and go, well, how does that guy get bullied? But you got to understand, the guy that's bullying him is just as big. And again, you have the whole group thing. The day that he left practice, there was a gag that they were pulling on him where basically he went to sit down with the guys on the line, and they all got up and left and went to a different table. So automatically he felt left out. So again, you know, is his self-esteem low? Is it high? You know, confidence is always changing. And, you know, as an athlete, again, you're under a lot of pressure. And so sometimes your confidence is high, sometimes your confidence is not. And it's all in the public eye. You know, you're talking about a guy who had a great season the year before, comes back this year, and his season isn't so good. Now, is it because of what's going on, you know, behind closed doors with the team and practice and the culture of the organization? Or is it that his self-esteem was already damaged and now these guys are just going to work and bullying him and it's getting worse?
Okay, you bring up the incident where he went to sit down with his teammates and his teammates got up and left. Now, as reprehensible as that sounds, I've heard other players say, well, that's something that happens in a lot of team situations as practical jokes in the past.
Mm-hmm. And that's only a piece of it, though. I mean, when we hear about those text messages and the name-calling and the words that were used, they're pretty offensive.
Yes, yes. I'm just trying to decipher between the stuff that seems to be regular, for lack of a better term, jocularity, as coarse as it seems to the general population, and items that, like the text messages, that really have gone too far. There are different levels here, are there not?
Incognito's interview, he comes out and he says, you know, I should have never called him the N-word. I should have never used or said some of the things I said. So right off the bat, he's already admitting that he went too far and said some things that were just out of the norm. I would find it hard to believe that that would be part of a normal culture anywhere, where somebody could be called certain things.
Right. Now, I mentioned in the introduction you have a book, The Self-Confidence Factor, A Parent's Guide to Bully Prevention. So this is something you know quite a bit about. What made you write the book?
You know, I've had a martial arts school for over 20 years, and I've seen so many people come in and not know what to do when their kids are being bullied. You're talking about 160,000 kids that miss school every single year because they're being bullied. It affects 3.2 million families, right? We know in the workplace it affects over 12 million people. So we're talking about an epidemic in our communities, and people need advice. They need to know what to do, and I recognize if people are coming into my school and my business and my community not knowing what to do, they need a resource, and that's the goal of the book, is to give them a resource, somewhere where they could turn and get some practical, common-sense tools that they can use to help their children with bullying. Mm.
Do you think that the situation that has taken place, and it's still far from over because, again, we haven't heard from Jonathan Martin, do you think that the spotlight that's been shone on this whole situation can have a positive effect and a trickle-down effect to kids in school, college athletes, and the like?
Absolutely. I think it sends a very strong message that this type of behavior will not be tolerated anywhere, whether it's you're talking about professional sports, college, high school, or wherever. I think it's time that people come together and take a stand. You know, there's a lot of people in that Dolphins organization that have a lot to answer. You know, people who stood by and watched all this stuff take place and didn't do anything about it. You know, and in this scenario, it's kind of worked out okay. And when I say that, it's because, listen, you know, when we look at Martin, he didn't grab a gun and go back to the locker room and do something stupid. He didn't, you know, commit suicide. So it's kind of worked out okay. Well, we've seen this happen in high schools where kids have gotten guns and they've gone out and they've done horrible things. We've seen them turn violence onto themselves. 4,400 young people die from suicide every single year. So, again, I think this has worked out in a way where it's gotten a lot of attention, it's brought light to an issue that needs to be dealt with, and it's worked out in the most positive way that it can. And I would love to hear Martin's take on it and his perspective and his point of view and why he chose to respond to it the way he did.
How should the Dolphins, and by extension, how should the NFL respond to this situation?
I think the Dolphins are responding to the situation. I think the NFL as a whole needs to respond to the situation as well and look at who is truly responsible for it. In my estimation, somebody will probably end up losing their job when you have, you know, it would be like a boss telling a coworker, you know, listen, I need you to harass this person. That just would not fly. So I think everybody needs to look at what we're doing and how we're doing it as professionals and realize at the end of the day, we're a team. You know, and what is the goal of our team? Our goal of our team is to make sure that we win. And maybe we need to take a better approach to how we decide to toughen somebody up or how we decide to get the results that we're getting.
We're hearing stories about people coming out on various sides of the situation, and there's a question as to whether who will be more welcome back into the team if that opportunity were to arise, Richie Incognito or Jonathan Martin? I mean, you know, welcome back by teammates.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's tough because you have a lot of teammates that came forward and were on Incognito's side and said that, you know, these guys were the best of friends. Now, I find that a little hard to understand, but not being there, we don't know what's going on in the real world behind closed doors. Again, that's why I think Martin's take on it is going to be very important. As far as teams and Incognito, you know, he does have a reputation, but can people change? Of course they can. Does he want to change? That's a different story. I don't know. But for me as a coach, if I had a choice, I'd probably bring Martin back.
The book that you have, again, is The Self-Confidence Factor, A Parent's Guide to Bully Prevention. It's written by Carl Romaine. Carl, I thank you very, very much for taking time to be on the program with us. You have a website. What is your website?
SifuRomaine.com, and a portion of all book sales does go to charity. We support two charities in particular. That's Health Corps, which is about abolishing childhood obesity, and the Unmake the Bully Project.
Carl, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you.
Carl Romaine, author of The Self-Confidence Factor, A Parent's Guide to Bully Prevention. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0222, and you'll find links to Carl's website and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about relationships in television commercials, primarily bad relationships in TV commercials. Plus, Stuart Nullman is back with another edition of Book Banter. And of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day, plus lots more Stuff File news right here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get right back to the stuff. We go to England for our next story. A 75-year-old British woman was convicted of assault for emptying a bag of dog droppings on a cyclist that she accused of riding too close to her. Prosecutors say Susan Corral of Trumpington, England, swung a bag of dog feces at cyclist Michael Ramage on September the 12th because she was angry at how often cyclists passed too close to her while she was walking. Susan, who said she did not expect the bag to split and spill its contents all over Michael, was ordered to pay him $40 to cover his dry cleaning costs as well as $160 to the court for costs. She was also given a one-year conditional discharge. By the way, I'm assuming and openly hoping that it was an oversight in the way that this story was written, because I did mention that Susan assaulted the cyclist with a bag of dog feces, but I didn't actually mention that she had a dog. Let's go out on a limb and say she did, otherwise it's just plain freaky. Yes, and speaking of just plain freaky, a fellow by the name of Edwin Tobergta of Hamilton, Ohio, is now famous as the man caught having sex with a pool raft. His sentencing hearing was last week, and he offered a little insight into his proclivities. One thing that stands out, no, that's not what I mean, but he once pleasured himself with a pumpkin. Yes, a pumpkin. Edwin was sentenced this week to 11 months in prison for defiling the inflatable raft. He committed the act in June in front of children. That's so wrong on so many levels. At an earlier court session, Edwin pleaded guilty to public indecency. This is the second time he's been caught in flagrante delicto with an inflatable pool toy. The same thing happened back in 2011. But a less reported aspect of his checkered history with the law occurred back in 2002 when he was arrested for allegedly diddling an inflatable pumpkin that was part of a Halloween display. At his recent court hearing, Judge Charles Pater called Edwin's actions lewd, obscene, and something society's not going to tolerate. Edwin apologized in court before being sentenced. "I do want to apologize for my actions. I'm sorry," he said. "I'm ready to get my life together and quit all of this nonsense." Yeah. Hey, buddy. It's a jack-o'-lantern, not a jack... Oh, never mind. Anyway. And while we're seem to be going down this rabbit hole of lewdness, let's just get to our next story here on the Stuff File. This show is certainly taking a left turn somewhere. But anyway, if a woman who sleeps around a lot is considered loose, then this next woman must have the consistency of mercury. I'm talking about one Alina Desane. A British dating website ran a contest to find Britain's horniest student and attracted hundreds of male and female candidates who documented their conquests online. The winner, 20-year-old Alina, wrote, "I should be the UK's horniest student because I have sex with at least 2 to 3 different people a week. It is hard to compare with those kinds of numbers. Some of her proudest moments," she wrote, "were sleeping with 2 of the university union's bartenders and having sex in a university computer room." Latvian-born Alina, who refers to herself as Slutvian, wow, said winning the contest has made her even hornier. The website creator said, "After meeting with Alina personally, I am 100% confident I have found the horniest student in the country. I have never met someone so sexually confident." All of her hard work and determination won Alina £500, a year's supply of condoms, a mobile phone, and a crate of alcohol. You know, you have to wonder what to her constitutes a year's supply of condoms. Anyway, no need to worry about the poor girl's health. Her housemates forced her to take an STD test, which she came through with flying colors. It came back negative. Wow. You know, I'm surprised the doctor in that test didn't hear an echo. Anyway, we have time for one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. This story takes us to Michigan. A Michigan man says he moved into a house next door to his ex-wife and erected a 12-foot-tall statue of the middle finger. Alan Markowitz recently moved into the home in Bloomfield Hills, which is next door to where his ex-wife lives with her new lover. Markowitz said that he erected the statue to get even with his ex-wife's new lover. He said he never meant for the matter to be public, but said the story grabbed local media attention when his ex-wife's daughter posted a picture of the statue on Twitter. Markowitz owns 3 Detroit strip clubs and recently wrote a book that is reportedly being turned into a TV series. Okay, so we have a guy in the adult entertainment industry who apparently can't act like an adult. Has he given any thought as to why his wife divorced him? Probably not. I mean, if you're going to move next door to your ex-wife and then erect a giant statue of a middle finger, I mean, that's just childish on so many levels. Get on with your own life, pal. Leave the wife alone, or the ex-wife, I should say. This is a person who needs some relationship therapy, which, by the way, ironically brings us to our next guest on this program, The Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Relationship coach Frank Kermit is a best-selling author, educator, and relationship columnist. He also has a website called friendstoloversformula.com. And Frank has been on the program before talking about relationships. This time around, we're talking about bad relationships being used as humor to sell products. Frank joins us on the line right now via Skype to Skype communications. Hi, Frank.
How are you, Mr. Holder?
Ah, just tickety-boo. Nice to have you back on the program with us once again.
Always great to be back, Peter.
I wanted to have you on to talk about holiday relationships, which we'll get to if we have some time, but also this idea of using humor to sell products and showing bad relationships to do it. And one of the things that comes to mind right now, I don't know how many in our audience have had a chance to see a Nissan commercial where a guy is buying, I guess, ice cream. It's not quite sure for his date or for his wife. And he sees a Nissan Sentra across the street, admires the car, when the woman in the car, in his car, looks at the vehicle, all she sees is the woman, the very sexy woman, getting out of the car, thinks he's looking at her, and locks the doors.
Yep, she locks the door, she rolls up the window, she basically says, well, if you're going to look at another girl when the point of the car commercial was he was looking at the car, well, I'm just not going to let you back into the car, even though you just went and bought me some ice cream.
Yes, and clearly it's his car.
Yeah, he's the driver, and I get the joke. Okay, I get the joke. But as a relationship coach, I have to be mindful that a joke isn't always just a joke. The way I teach it when it comes to absorbing any form of media, entertainment for one person can be education for another. This might teach a number of women out there who are watching it, especially if they're young and experienced with relationships, that that kind of behavior is acceptable. It's also teaching men out there that that kind of behavior may be acceptable because, well, it happened to somebody else and they were okay with it, when in reality, you don't treat your partner that way. First of all, you find out. She didn't give him a chance to explain. No, I was looking at the car, not the girl. She jumped to a conclusion and immediately shut him out. Well, if you're looking to get divorced, that's a pretty good behavior pattern to adopt.
Yes, I guess it is. So I guess what you're saying is that there is, when it comes to advertising and using relationships, and in most cases when you're advertising, you're using bad relationships. Where is the line? Is there a line?
Sure. There. One clear line is violence. There was a KFC commercial where they were trying to sell their spicy chicken bits. And it was some guy was walking in, he was eating his chicken, walks into a house party, it looks like, sees a very attractive girl, they make eye contact, he goes up to her, introduces himself, offers her a piece of chicken, she eats the piece of chicken, and when he says, how is it, she makes this face of, oh my, wow, because it's supposedly very, very spicy.
Right.
Her reaction is to slap him.
I've seen that ad, yes.
And as she's walking away, she runs back, eats another piece of chicken, and grabs the chicken and leaves. And he's standing there completely befuddled as to what just happened. Now, let's look at what's happened in this commercial. Yeah, it's a great joke. Wow, she got the chicken. She was completely the entire selling line of that commercial. The chicken is so spicy, it's like a slap in the face. What you're doing right here is you're condoning violence. You're saying that just because I have a reaction to something, I can get violence. There's no repercussion for the woman. She steals his food. He approaches her. She steals his food. And the commercial leaves it off as, well, he's not going to do anything about it, so this is okay. This is not okay. When commercials go a bit too far and they condone this type of behavior, it encourages anybody who's watching it to repeat that same type of behavior, that same type of recklessness, that same type of, I'm entitled to whatever I want, and if I don't get it, too bad, and I'll get violent, and there's nothing you can do about
it. And
this is just not helpful.
Yeah, you look at things, of course, because you're a relationship coach, and you look at it from a relationship situation. Looking at it from the broader picture, I'm thinking that part of the problem here, because we're both seeing the problem with the issue, but looking at it in the broader picture, we now live in a world that is so politically correct. I think to a point, too politically correct. And when it comes to humor, people don't have an opportunity to let off some steam for fear of offending anyone. And as a result, we have now, and I'm not saying it's right to make fun of women or minorities or weight or all these other things, but because we are so politically correct, we have now honed down onto one topic, the white male.
Yes.
He is fair game for everything. And that's what we are now seeing in commercials and certainly in relationship ads.
If you want to come up with a way where you can enjoy humor but not cross a line, you simply do what's called the Wendy Maltz test. You reverse the gender in any of these commercials. And if you can find one combination that makes you hold back and say, whoa, no, that's not funny, that's not cool, that's how you know that there's a problem with the premise.
Mm, good point.
So let's take the two commercials we've described right now, the Nissan commercial and the KFC commercial. Let's reverse the genders. What if it was the man who was locking the woman out of a car? How would people feel about that? Most people would be thinking, hey, she's not safe out there. What's he going to do, abandon her on the street? What kind of a jerk is that? The KFC commercial, even because of the slap, let's reverse the genders there. How many people would be laughing if it was a man slapping a woman and stealing her chicken?
Right.
And I, you know, it's, if it doesn't match up, if it doesn't pass when you reverse the genders in even one of those combinations, then it shouldn't pass at all. Now, but you are right. Political correctness may have gone too far. However, as a relationship coach, you do need to understand that my perspective is I see the worst of the worst. I have people coming into my office that literally are in horrible situations. They're facing a divorce. They're going through the court systems. They're about to lose a 20-year marriage because they just don't realize what it is they've done to turn their partner off or turn their partner away. I have people who are young people who are struggling to get into serious relationships. And the one thing they all have in common is they don't know any better. There was never anyone to educate them about how to conduct themselves when dating, how to conduct themselves in relationships, things that should have been passed on from generation to generation. The social norms have all been removed. These people are blind. These people just don't know any better when it comes to relationships. And that's what I'm seeing in my practice. So when I see commercials like that, it really rubs me the wrong way because I actually know people that wouldn't be able to think, well, that's funny because it's unacceptable. Not, well, that's funny because that's happened to me.
And therein lies the situation. Part of the problem is people don't seem to understand what humor is. That humor is not necessarily reality.
Exactly. At one time, somebody is walking the street and slips on a banana peel. I remember the Three Stooges. I love the Three Stooges. Abbott and Costello, classic humor. Well, there's a lot of things that happened in those television shows and those old movies, people getting slapped around, people falling off cliffs and so on. But it's slapstick comedy. You know that in real life, people wouldn't have survived those things. People wouldn't tolerate getting slapped around that much. And that's part of what made it funny. When people don't realize what the humor is supposed to be, they'll interpret their own idea as to why it's supposed to be funny.
We have just about a minute, so I do want to get to this, and that is you have a website called friendstoloversformula.com. What can people find when they go there?
Well, I'm actually giving away one of my best-selling books. I'm giving it away for free. I have now it's an ebook, From Friends to Lovers, Stop Being Her Emotional Cookie Man. It's about nice guys who struggle to connect with women, who struggle to attract with women, and it teaches them how to be more assertive, how to be more alpha, how to be more masculine so that they can actually attract a girl that they've been friends with forever and they've been madly in love with forever. But the girl says, but I just see you as a friend. And I'm going to be giving away that ebook on that website, From Friends to Lovers Formula, friendstoloversformula.com.
Oh, wow. I think every guy has heard that, I just want to be friends.
No. And you have to wonder why, thinking, look, I'm a nice guy. I treat her well. I listen to her problems. I buy her gifts. When she needs somebody there to help her move, when she needs somebody there to get her out of a crisis, I'm the guy who does it. So why doesn't she date me? And I go through the process to say, well, sometimes as a friend, you address a certain group of emotional needs that you that are only going to keep you a friend, and you end up violating the other emotional needs that stop you from becoming her lover.
Excellent stuff. Just one quick question, getting back to commercials. Do you recommend that people sit down, couples sit down and discuss these commercials?
I think that when a commercial like this comes on, If it's bothering one of the two people in the couple, they should mention it, not because it's of the commercial itself, but to see what the person's values are. These commercials are great for one thing, and that is, if I'm watching that commercial with somebody, and I can say, you know, I don't like that commercial, and here's why, I'm expressing the things that I value. And if somebody else doesn't at least understand what it is I value, that's a sign whether or not you're compatible with the person you're with.
Excellent stuff. Frank, always a treat to have you on the program. Again, the website, friendstoloversformula.com. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, sir, and I look forward to being on in the future.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check out his website at friendstoloversformula.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0222, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A union representing professors at a law school in Cleveland has filed a lawsuit against the school over pay raises given to some of the professors. The professors each received a raise of $666, and they say that the dean picked that figure as retaliation because they organized a union at the school. They say that 666 is universally associated with the devil, and that by choosing that amount for their raise, the dean is calling them Satan. The law school strongly denies the charge and says the amount of the raise was simply the result of mathematical division. Let's be fair, the number 666 can be taken negatively, so I had a devil of a time deciding whether to talk about this case. You see, that figure can actually be a good omen. Few people know this, but a little computer company once priced its very first product, the Apple I computer, at $666, and they've done pretty well since then. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, Stuart is here. Mr. Nauman?
Mr. Holder?
Nice to see you. Nice to hear you once again.
Yes, well, it's good to be heard, actually. it's like children should be seen and not heard. No, for me, it's the other way around.
Okay.
Good to be heard.
Yes. Well, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I figured... It's been almost 100 years since World War I began. And I figured release a series of books to commemorate this event. So I'm going to start with one called it's called The Great War, a photographic narrative. And one of the first images that you see when you open this impressively massive illustrated tome, which is called The Great War Photographic Narrative, is the bloodstained military tunic that was worn by Archduke Franz Ferdinand of the Habsburg dynasty of Austria-Hungary on June 28, 1914, when he was assassinated in Sarajevo. Now, as you glance closely at this light blue tunic stained by the Archduke's blood, it's hard to believe that this piece of military dress garb sparked a war that began in August of 1914 as a clash of empires and ended up 4 years later as the war to end all wars, in which over 70 million men were mobilized into military service, and 45 million of them ended up as casualties, 9 million of them fatally. However, the fighting in this war, which during the time between 1914 and 1918 was dubbed the Great War, wasn't only confined to the muddy trenches of France and Belgium. In fact, the battle lines extended to the jungles of East Africa, the deserts of the Middle East, the snow-covered Italian Alps, the North Sea and the Dardanelles, and actually the skies of Western Europe. So this conflict truly became the First World War. Now, as the centennial anniversary of its outbreak happens next year, the First World War is still remembered for the enormous loss of life and the new devastating and destructive methods and weapons that were used to wage the war, not to mention how the map of Europe, the Middle East, and Africa were forever redrawn as a result of this bloody 4 years of war. As well, a more serious effort was employed to visually record every aspect of the war. That's thanks to more portable cameras that allowed the average soldier to take their own snapshots of life on the front, as well as armies appointing skilled professional photographers and more press photographers being assigned to give a more authentic view of this first ever global conflict, which is why this book gives an important visual record to what went on between 1914 and 1918 that mere words just can't do any justice to. So this is compiled with the help of the Imperial War Museum in London, and it contains over 380 photographs that were taken by the average soldier and official photographers to cover year by year every aspect of the Great War, from every major front where it was fought. So we see, when you look through this book, the jubilation of well-dressed soldiers marching to the front for what they hope would be a six-month war in 1914. We see the development of different aspects of the conflict that came to forever identify it nearly 100 years later, from the trenches to the gas attacks to air raids to ironclad tanks. We see the life of a soldier in the trenches and behind the lines. We see life on the home front. And above all, we see the terrifying destructive effects of the first truly mechanized war.
It seems kind of unusual. I mean, you mentioned the fact that there are pictures taken by photographers and also military personnel. Going back to that time period, owning a camera was not exactly something the common man had.
Well, also this was the era of the Kodak Brownie. So, it was compact and it just allowed the average person to be a photographer. And the more professional photographers had their bulky equipment that they took with them to the battlefields. But there were, the Kodak Brownie did it all.
Hmm. And it also seems kind of macabre that, as you started off, a picture of a blood-stained tunic, staring at something like that has such an integral part of history, seems almost kind of ghoulish. It's like staring at Jackie Kennedy's pillbox hat and dress.
No, exactly. And those are facts going to be in storage at the National Archives for about another 100 years. But it's just amazing how, this is from the Imperial War Museum collection, that this one tunic sparked a very destructive, very tragic war that forever changed the world. So it's hard to believe just one little thing could spark such a conflict on a wide scale. Sometimes it's not easy to wrap around, but when you look at it, it's hard to believe that, yes, this piece of military dress, started a war, a very large one at that, and also ended the for most part a lot of the dynastic empires that ruled Europe.
Hmm.
So it's very intriguing when you think about it.
Yeah. And the book again is called?
Well, I'll tell you this. Whether you're talking about the Red Baron or the Lawrence of Arabia, Ypres or the Somme, Gallipoli or Aqaba, the Great War, a photographic narrative, it shows how the camera became a permanent, tangible witness to the real face of total war and the accompanying horrors that made the First World War not terrible beauty, but just plain terrible for everyone involved in it. So the book is called The Great War, a Photographic Narrative by Mark Holborn and Hilary Roberts. It's published by Knopf, and the price is a very princely $114.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But it's a really impressive book. But, if you can afford it, and if you're probably a military history buff, worth to add to your library. But if you can't afford that book...
I was about to ask, yeah.
I have a couple of other suggestions, which are a lot more affordable. Dealing with the First World War, in particular, in the first months of the conflict, 1914. First of all, there's the ultimate classic, The Guns of August by Barbara Tuckman, which was published 50 years ago. And for many years, it's seen as the definitive account of how the war started and why the war started and what went on during those first months in 1914. But also, a book that just recently came out by Margaret Macmillan, who wrote an excellent book called Paris 1919 about how the war ended. She wrote a sort of companion volume of how the war began called The War That Ended Peace, The Road to 1914. And it deals with a lot of the events and the people between 1900 and when the war erupted in 1914 that basically ended a lot of the empires and ended the sense of the Belle Epoque peace that a lot of people enjoyed during that time. So a little bit more affordable, but just as very interesting reading as well.
Meanwhile, the current book again is?
The Great War, a Photographic Narrative by Mark Holborn and Hilary Roberts. Like I said before, published by Knopf. And the price, if you can afford it, $114.
And how can people find you, Mr. Nolman?
Well, you're not going to find me in a trench, I'll tell you that. But you can find me, on the Montreal Times. you read me every week on paper or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Well, you're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost at a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed still have an idiot of the day coming your way, but I've still got a couple of Stuff File news stories to get to before we get to that point of the program. So let's get to it. Cops and donuts sounds like a scene out of a sitcom, right? Something that is supposedly very stereotypical when we all know, come on, let's be honest, it's not. But anyway, a Florida man is facing charges that he impersonated a cop to get discounted donuts. Pasco County Sheriff's deputies say 48-year-old Charles T. Chuckberry tried it twice recently at a Tampa-area Dunkin' Donuts. They say the first time he showed the clerk a badge and a holstered gun telling him, "See, I'm a cop." When he returned the next day, the manager wrote down his license plate number. Deputies set up surveillance at the store and busted Barry when he returned. Authorities say they found a badge and a .38 caliber revolver in his pocket. Yeah, wow. Gee, I wonder what kind of donuts they have in prison. I guess he's going to find out. Yeah, bet they're not as good as Dunkin' Donuts. Just saying. And this next guy will never let a stranger into his home again, let alone have sex with one. In the early hours of Sunday morning, 41-year-old Benjamin Duddles of Waukesha, Wisconsin, called 911 for help to remove a woman from his bed who was snoring like a train. Duddles explained that he wasn't sure how she got into his apartment, but still decided to drink and sleep with her. However, when he couldn't get her to leave because she sleeps like the dead, he called the cops. Police determined that the woman was fine, save for the sleep apnea, a possible deal breaker in relationships, whether they're serious or purely sexual. Authorities told Duddles that his dilemma was not a police matter, and recommended that he sleep on his couch since he let her into his house. I don't mean to be cold and callous here, but since you had to call the cops and they did show up, I'm assuming they woke the woman up to see if she's okay. At this point, couldn't he just put her in a cab and call it a night? I don't know. Calling the cops because someone is in your house, snoring loudly, calling 911 almost sounds like something that might be worthy of the idiot of the day, but it's not. I wasn't going to make him the idiot of the day. But this next person, well, this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Police out helping to keep the streets clean arrested a man suspected of stealing a street sweeper. According to Sacramento police, officers were out on patrol when they saw a street sweeper truck peel out of a parking lot and onto the street. The truck promptly ran a red light and didn't have its headlights on, prompting the officers to try to pull the street sweeper over. However, police note, the driver pushed on and didn't stop until he had hit three parked cars. The driver then bolted from the truck. A police perimeter was set up in the area, but the suspected driver, 18-year-old LaVon Dill, eventually surrendered himself to a canine officer. Dill now faces charges of fleeing, possession of a stolen vehicle, and hit-and-run charges. Well, so much for making a clean getaway, right? Yeah. Anyway, I mean, what the heck was he going to do with a street sweeper? And why would he think that he could outrun the cops driving such a vehicle? Well, one reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0222. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0222. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCore in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.